Yes, and g'day to everyone. Welcome to the Tripod Live with Winnie and Clarkey. We are here to recap all the round eight action so far. Knights fall agonisingly short again. Tigers extend their losing streak, and there was a game at Suncorp, which, and you can hear me stutter there, I'd rather not talk about it, but we will recap that and more. Quick reminder, we'll also be previewing two huge games of Anzac Round. Winnie, I can see you gnawing at the bit to say something there, presumably about the Suncorp game, I would assume.
Well, we were both there in person, so we met in person for the first time. Unfortunately, we didn't get along. We didn't see eye to eye on a great deal of stuff, so this was probably going to be our last pod. Sorry, guys. While I'm happy about the result at Suncorp, of course we're going to talk all about that one. That's one of those games that needs its own whole podcast to dissect. We'll do our best with our major takeaways, the highs and lows. Highs and lows from round eight betting was one winning best bet on Thursday night. Had the Bunnies plus the 6.5, they won outright. But then I had the Eels, and they didn't come that close. Although there's talking points out of that one. We lost the mixed matchup as well. And my same gamble was a false start where Hayes Dunster was scratched. So we got our money back on that one. But I do have a best bet. Now, Clarkey, don't leave me hanging for 15 seconds here. Do you want me to jump straight into the one best bet that I do have? Now I've done my deep dive for the Anzac Day games tomorrow.
Mate, please do. We saw last week, I struggle on the big job side. I'm going to have to hand this over to you from now on.
You get that on the big jobs. All right. Well, I've looked at the games closely tomorrow. As Harry Potter says, please unban me from Tripod app. The Tripod app was shut down over a year ago, unfortunately, mate. So you're not banned. Best bet is Roosters over 4.5 total tries. So I do like the Roosters tomorrow. I don't know who's going to be kicking goals for them. So I just take them for tries. I've got a team that has scored only 10 a game on average the last two, but like Teddy was out, remember, for a couple of games with a concussion. He's had one game back on deck. They've had a long turnaround. They've played two good defenses their last two matches, the Roosters, both night games. Now they play a lesser team in the day. The problem they had previously, they couldn't build pressure and they couldn't execute. And I think that while they have changed their halves, bringing Manu closer to the action is never a bad thing. Crichton's in, Tupanua's in. Unsure about their minutes, their consistency, but their natural threats on the edges. Brandon Smith, and Victor Radley out to redeem themselves after Sinbin's last start. I think the Roosters will have plenty of success tomorrow against the Dragons. How do you like that, Clarkey?
I like it a lot. One man, I think, he gets a little bit of a bad rap sometimes, but Gus Gould, I actually think a lot of the stuff he does say is intelligent. He said for a while that he thinks Manu and Luke Currie are the Roosters' best halves combination. Luke Currie seamlessly sort of fits back into that seven, and then from an attacking standpoint, maybe not so much from a managing and controlling the game, Winnie, but I think purely attack, you maybe even do gain a leg by having Manu at 5'8", as opposed to a Sam Walker. But with that best bet, it seems like a pretty seamless way to get into our previews for Anzac Round. So it does start with the Roosters versus Dragons at Allianz Stadium. The line is set at -13.5 in the Chookies' favour. We spoke on the change. Manu's at 5'8". Sam Walker out. He played New South Wales Cup today. Momorowski moves to the centre. Angus Crichton and Satili Tupanua are back for them. There was a little bit of late mail. Nathan Brown might come in. He won't. He played New South Wales Cup today. For the Dragons, Jaden Sewer is out. So Ben Murdoch-Masilla comes in. You've got the Roosters for a best bet, Winnie. So a bit of a chance to expand on that a little bit more.
Right. So the Dragons won this corresponding fixture last year. I think that's worth mentioning because the Roosters were a better team than the Dragons last year, and losing games they should have won ultimately cost the Roosters a chance to kind of be a top four side and then not have to go pedal to the metal all the way through the finals, where ultimately they had a couple of stars that got injuries late in the season and they couldn't play their best footy in the finals. I think the Roosters remember that because I know they've got a list that they think that can compete, but they can't muck around. I think that change of Sam Walker, you know, why would you drop Sam Walker? They definitely haven't given up on him. They know they believe in his talent. It's not a long-term play to drop him. It's a short-term play in the sense that he can develop some skills at reserve grade, but I think it shows a sense of urgency that this is the best team the Roosters can pick right now. I don't think you lose anything in attack bringing Manu in and shifting Currie to halfback. You may actually gain in defense too because Walker, that was a bit of a deficiency. So I like that move for the short term. I think they're definitely, with a longer build-up, going to come in strong. In this one, I mentioned Tupanua, Crichton, and big ins. Yes, they might be a bit rusty, but then you mentioned Sewer. He's been probably the Dragons' best second rower, and so he will be missed. Look, the Dragons have been a tough watch the last couple of weeks. Now, you could argue they easily could have won the last two games. I know one was against your boys, but they keep on accosting themselves with self-inflicted wounds. The thing is, though, I don't think the Dragons rebound here because it's a step up in class. And while they'll be fired up, I do think those errors inevitably creep in, and the Roosters are a team that will make you pay with the game breakers they possess.
Yeah, I think the Anthony Griffin situation, it plays negatively into the Dragons' favours. I look at it as if they were going to, and they really want to play for their coach and secure his future, they probably would have done it by now. I don't see them suddenly doing that against a side like the Roosters. But further, let's say that they have hit the breaking point and they really do want to play for hook. That could almost creep more errors into their game, which already has plenty trying a little bit too hard. For the Roosters, on the other hand, I don't love Sam Walker being dropped, but I think it sends a clear message to the rest of the team that it doesn't matter if you're a spine player, basically besides Tedesco and a few others, you can be dropped if you're not performing in this side. And I think it almost puts the Roosters on a little bit of the edge, knowing that they need to step up in this game. Of course, Anzac Grand itself is enough motivation for them, but maybe that extra level that they just haven't been hitting in recent weeks. So I think there's that message there. Stats-wise, the Dragons have not been at their best this year. They have struggled in most departments. And if you look at this game from that lens, the Roosters have won 8 of their past 9 against the Dragons. So the stats kind of do lead to the Roosters getting the job done here. The Dragons have had a little bit of success, though, lately in this game, Winnie. They've won 9 of the past 14 on Anzac Day. But this is a Dragons side that in previous years around this time has been at the top of the ladder and slowly sort of descended as the season goes on, whereas it's the opposite this year. They're down the bottom. So I don't read into that stat too much. I like the Roosters here in a big way. I think they've got more than enough to get the job done here against the Dragons side that just isn't at their best yet. We then move on to, it's a doubleheader, of course, on Anzac Day. So this time we are in Amy Park. It's the Storm taking on the Warriors. The line is set at -12.5 in the Storm's favour. That's because Nick Meaney returns for them, which moves Munster to 5'8", and Nelson Asofa-Solomona, a huge inclusion, though Tui Kamakamitha is suspended. For the Warriors, speaking of suspensions, Niokoro returns. That pushes Josh Curran to the bench and Tang Tuapiki out. How are you seeing this one, Winnie? The Warriors are a different side this year, but can they break that awful curse?
I think they have a chance. I mean, even in both games, I'd be more surprised if the Dragons pulled the upset, but it's good. Like, you got teams that are like $4 head-to-head. Like, you're not going to be shocked if there's an upset tomorrow by any means, but you're also not going to be shocked if either of these games is a blowout. It kind of feels like everything's on the table. Like, the underdog's going to need to be buttoned up to keep it close, but you wouldn't put it past these sides. As we said in the previous game, the Roosters are off 2 straight losses. They're not been as consistent as they would like. And you can say the same about the Storm, who come into this game also off a loss, while it is New Zealand who's off a win. I'm going to make a side point. We need this game to be in New Zealand one year, I feel. Just feel like they deserve that. And maybe that would help them with their chances of winning this fixture, because the Storm have had a bit of a stranglehold on it in recent times. As you say, both getting a key New Zealand representative forward back in Nelson, as well as Niokoro. And then Meaney's in at 1, so you slide Munster back to 6. And that's the difference in this game for me, is 6-7-9. It's pretty obvious. And as good as Johnson has been, and I know that Dylan Walker did well for the Warriors last week, I just think in key moments in this one, even if it is close, I know that the Storm sets are going to end well and they're going to execute and come up with quality plays throughout this game in the big moments. But I don't know what I'm going to get from the Warriors. I know I underestimated New Zealand, probably have a few times this year. Last week, I actually thought North Queensland might get them and that they wouldn't score a lot of points with 2 of their 4 starting spine out. But I feel like that could still be an issue here, especially when you come up against such a strong spine in Melbourne. And I had to mention again, like when you get the better team, which is Melbourne, on the longer turnarounds and more time to kind of get things right, and they're coming off a loss, so they should be dialed in. It's hard to go against that. But as I say, I think New Zealand's got a better chance of an upset than the Dragons. And I think their game plan has to be, got to come in fierce and physical and try and match the Storm, which I think they can, especially in the forwards. I think their hard-running forward pack's as strong as Melbourne, and that could keep them in the game. And I'm actually going to roll. Well, no, I do have a mixed matchup, but I'll get your side of the coin on this one, how you see it, and then I will share. Bonus mixed matchup, guys. I surprised you.
Nice, awesome. Yeah, this is a tough one because, you know, most games when you where there's a minus 12 and a half line, it's probably not this difficult to tip. The Warriors have shown this year against the Sharkies and the Cowboys in Townsville, they can go to your home ground and beat you as underdogs. They did it twice. But then I think back to the Storm, and every time we start to underestimate them, they served up that performance against the Roosters at Amy Park. I do understand this line, though, and let me get into why. Last year, Winnie, this game was 70-10, and the year before that, it was 42-20. The Warriors have not won on Anzac Day since 2014, and they've lost their past 13 in a row to the Storm. Now, don't get me wrong, that's only stats on paper, and this is a different Warriors side. That's not up for debate. But I do think the Storm are still travelling well enough in this that I think they should have enough to get the job done here. I mean, history is not on the Warriors' side at all. And you don't want to read into the stats too much. I feel like I am. But a side that has, you know, Jerome Hughes, Munster back in his natural position, Nick Meaney's been travelling well. I think they do have the tools at home to beat the Warriors in what should be a close game, actually. I do think maybe the 12.5 wouldn't be a bad bet for the Warriors there. As for a try scores in this one, we need some stats here. Jerome Hughes, he's got 7 tries in his last 7 against the Warriors. He has that New Zealand connection, seems to always step up for those games. And he's also been a recipient of the MVP award on this day in the past. And of course, Coates, he's got 16 in his past 12 at Amy Park. That's a little bit of stats for you there, guys. But we'll move into the mixed matchup. What do you got for us, Winnie?
Just remembering last year, not only was it 70-10, I believe the second half was something like 56-0, if not 60-0, something like 11 second half tries. Crazy. Now, that team was coached by Nathan Brown. This is a different Warriors team. I'm certainly banking on that for the mixed matchup to have a chance because I said it there. I think that the Warriors can put up a bigger fight and stay in the game for longer than the Dragons. So it's as simple as that. I am going Roosters to outscore Storm. So a bonus, Anzac Day, mixed matchup involving obviously the two games. And we've got Roosters, I think, well, my best bet is Roosters over 4.5 tries. So I'm thinking kind of 5 tries plus puts us on the board and the way the Warriors have defended this year. And I think if the Warriors struggle in their game, in the later game, it's their attack that they're going to struggle to keep up with the Storm on the scoreboard rather than just getting holes punched in them. I think the Warriors will physically be able to hold up pretty well. So that's what I'm banking on there. $2.20, you can have up to 200 with that on Toppy. You need Toppy account, of course. TP Live is your code. But always ask yourself, what are you really gambling with? And for free confidential support, call 1800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au. You like that mixed matchup, Clarkie?
I like it a lot. I think it feeds into sort of both the way our tips were going. And yeah, beautiful. I mean, Anzac Day is a great day to commemorate, enjoy the day off, remember, you know, the sacrifices others made so we can enjoy it. And a part of that, Aussies do love a punt. So, you know, having a few beers with your mates and maybe a mixed matchup and maybe a best bet. But of course, please do gamble responsibly. We're going to get into the recap for the past 6 games we've had this run. But just before we do that, we've got a clip from Tristan, the CEO of TopSport. He's going to give us a bit of an exclusive market insight from the round. So we'll play that clip now.
Don't forget, he's a big Titans fan as well. So let's have a listen and see how he shaped up after the weekend.
Hello everyone, it's Tristan Merlihan here from TopSport. And some of the results and some of the finishes to the games on the weekend, they've been unbelievable. Unfortunately, the Titans were on the wrong side of a massive comeback. So it was very, very heartbreaking to watch that. My other team, who I supported well before we got involved with the Titans, the Panthers, they were on the other end of it. So personally, it's been a tough old weekend to watch the punters. They actually were very much on the right side of that South Sydney result. There was a lot of money for the plus and the head-to-head. And then also the unders, which obviously just failed with that missed kick at the end. So it was a painful result to start the weekend for us. The Broncos game actually ended up okay. There was some money for the Eels in that game. And then there was a couple of other tight finishes as well. The Knights-Cowboys game, that was obviously very, very tight, came down to the wire where the punters had a good little result on the Cowboys. That line moved significantly in the Cowboys' favour. And then I thought we might have got a little result late with the Tigers when they hit the front back end of that game where all the Maltese were running head-to-head into Manly, but obviously they just showed that they were able to get over the line. So we've got 2 games left in the weekend. The Roosters have been well-backed against the Dragons. That line's moved from 12.5 out to 13.5, short of the minus now. And the Storm Warriors game has seen a bit of back and forth in the betting. It stayed the same line the whole way. and now we're a little bit short of the plus. So a lot of multis running into the two favourites head-to-head just on the back of the way the other results have fallen throughout the weekend. Hopefully back to winner over the weekend. Good luck on the games tomorrow. Hope you all have a great Anzac Day and gamble responsibly.
Geez, I didn't know what we were going to see there at the end. Sorry, yeah. I should have probably looked at that before he said before we played it live. Anyway, that's live TV for you guys.
That is awesome. Straight into the minis, Tristan. I like it. I like your style,
What was it tucking into? Was it mints, was it?
Yeah, it looked like the old the Chewies. Tristan, good on you, mate. I didn't know he was a Panthers fan. Didn't know he was a Panthers fan before he was a Titans fan either. It seems like a natural way to get into that game. Tristan, chewing some chewing gum. We do it all in this show. What can we say? The Bunnies get up 20-18. My thing was Latrell. A few weeks ago when I came on here, I said, I think you have a big one. I think he's going to be a big game player this year. Didn't pan out that way so much when I made that prediction, but the last few weeks, he's certainly been awesome. And this one was no different, was it?
Well, it was a fantastic game. I felt like it was an arm wrestle for most of the way. You know, at one stage, we got Rabbitohs up 6-0. To later in the game, they're down 18-10. Crichton scores a try off a bomb where that one really hurt. Not only I think that was going to be the winning points, which Crichton had all of them for the Panthers, but at that point, 18-10, I thought we were going to lose the best bet of +6.5, which really didn't feel fair to me because it did feel like it's anyone's game. You get an over-converted try. Then we get a Latrell try with 6 minutes to go, as you touched on. He was big in the big moments. So, I mean, he was just in the right place at the right time for this one. A bomb, which, hey, if you were on the Panthers and Tristan was hurting with all the bets on the Rabbitohs, you might say that touch from Cody Walker was forward. The funny thing is when I re-watched it, Cody Walker did not even celebrate. He looked sheepish as hell. He thought he'd actually knocked it on. And even Lockie Ellis, who put up the kick, also didn't celebrate. I think his angle, he thought Walker had touched it. I think they're lucky it went up a try. The bunker didn't take it off him. I saw just minutes before that try, some group members got on the Bunnies live at 100-1 and 80-1, can you believe, head-to-head. But I don't know if the bookie in question that had those odds had a mistake, had a glitch, or whether, you know, Penrith being as strong as they are, up 8 points, less than 10 to go, if their algorithm tells them that's a price that that's very unlikely to win. But seems like pretty juicy odds, because I never felt like the Rabbitohs were out of the game. In saying that, South Sydney was still down 2 after they did score off that bomb, just like the 2021 grand final. They were down 2 late, and I started recording my reaction more so in case people wanted to see a heartbreaking late penalty Penrith try. I could kind of see that coming. And instead, you got my reaction to Souths making a break down the left wing after twice being foiled, where they looked like they'd made a line break down the left wing only for Cleary to make amazing cover tackles. But on this occasion, Isaiah Tass streaks away, scores the winner, so outright winner there. All the usual suspects had their fingerprints on this win, Latrell, Cody, Cookie, Murray, right? But I want to talk about one guy who's outstanding at his position, never gets spoken about in rep discussions, never, right? But you tipped him to score a try in this game, and he didn't. But does that mean he had a bad game? I would say not at all. Alex Johnston, I really believe, is a master of playing on the wing. And I know when people look at wingers, they're looking for big, you know, yardage now. You've got to be powerful. You obviously have to be fast. Not that he's slow, but you've got to fly in the air. But Johnston, he doesn't overwhelm or wow you with any of those physical traits, but his timing is impeccable. He just hits the ball at the exact right moment, and Souths are always happy to throw him the ball early and often because he never gets bundled over the sideline. He always sums it up in a split second, and if it's not on, if he can't beat his man on the outside, he always jags back in. He knows how to keep the play alive. He is so reliable, and I hope people realize that they don't score that winning try without him, where they shifted to the left and he draw in two defenders, and it's his offload back on the inside to Walker that leads to them winning this game. So shout out to you, Alex Johnston, the man who had how many tries last year, how many tries in his career, and people still call him the wrong name as well, Clarkie. So put some respect on that man's name.
One of those really rare occasions where he has played for the Kangaroos, but not for the Blues.
I don't even remember that. It has to be many years ago.
2014, I think, after they won the grand final, they put him on the wing there.
Okay.
And unreal player. And yeah, I'm a bit disappointed in Cross, if I'm being absolutely honest. He had a great game, but if I told you South scored late two tries, then a left dead, then you probably think one of them would be AJ with his record. I think the other person I might have mentioned for a try was Stephen Crichton.
You did say Crichton, and he had all the points for Penrith.
And that's what I was going to Photoshop him instead of the Panthers logo there, but I thought I won't do that. Maybe people won't see the funniest side in it. But look, I scored in the 70th minute, and keeping in mind I had tipped Panthers and we went against each other on this one, I was feeling pretty confident that the Panthers side would get home from there. Let me just say, the Panthers side in the last 3 years would not have folded under any circumstances, up by, I think it was 10 points. I think it was double digits, wasn't it, with 10 to go?
The lead?
Yeah.
18-10 it was.
Okay, so an 8-point lead. Even then, you know, Panthers in the last 3 years, I don't think there's one team that comes back from there against them. In saying that, though, the Bunnies are the one team that can do that. And those people that got on those live odds, absolutely genius. Don't think it would be a glitch, because when you call up live, they have to confirm it. So they would have, if it was a glitch, you think the operator would have seen that and gone,
Like they would. Maybe they should have still been like 15-20 to 1, like still long odds. I just don't know whether the computer should have been that generous. The bookies usually don't do you any favors, but I do say well done to those that got a piece of it.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's how you play the system, right? Because the Bunnies literally almost did this in round two as well. They started to fire late in that game as well. The thing is that Ivan Cleary should be disappointed about is the fact that it happened in round two. It's happened in a grand final. It's happened in a few games now with the Bunnies. The Panthers know they come late, and they still haven't really worked out a way to shut them down. That being said, this all came about from the Sunia Taruva injury. No one around him winning. He just missteps, rolls that ankle, has to come off. Now, they've got to make some quick shifts. Jamin Salmon goes to right center. And I have to say, he was out of his depth. As soon as he went to right center, that left side opened up like nothing I'd ever seen before. And I just wonder, for Ivan Cleary, as such an experienced coach, what was he seeing to think, I might put a bench back rower into the right center when I know that's the Bunnies' most dangerous side? Maybe Stephen Crichton, who's played there before. I don't know. I just feel like there had to be someone else who could cover that spot a little bit better. But ultimately, the stat here is that the Bunnies completed at 85%. That reduced the amount of defense they had to do throughout the game. And that's what gave them so much energy and the chance to come back in the last 10. Had they have not had such a high completion rate throughout this contest, they might not have had that energy to sort of explode in that last 10 minutes. Done it so many times now. Panthers don't have an answer for it. The next time these two teams match up will be very interesting. And you got me here. I went Panthers. But I did say at the start of the year, when we're split, I think you're going to get me more times than not this year. So it was a great way to get a tip wrong, given everyone else gets the best bet there. Next, it was Eels versus Broncos in Darwin. The Broncos got up 26-16. My MVP was Adam Reynolds with his kicking game, but that's not the talking point from this one. I believe when we were together at Suncorp, you called it hip drop roulette, and it was kind of what we saw here, wasn't it?
It was. So I'll get to that. Again, my same gamer, unfortunately, void. Well, maybe slightly fortunate, because I had either team 1-7, so that leg would have lost. Brisbane won by 10. I had Dunster to score a try. He subbed out late, which is why it was cancelled, and then Russell did score on the right wing and was very close to actually scoring again. He did score, and it was ruled out due to a forward pass. So, kind of, you know, the bet was in the mix there, just didn't get up. And, you know, no harm done there, but harm was done to our best bet, which lost, and the mixed matchup. We needed Brisbane to score under 20 points, which was a good bet for $3.35 that we had. But as you can see there, Broncos got 26, and they got, I think, at least 22 of them in the first half. They stopped scoring tries after that crazy 10-minute period, which I think sums up the whole game, where it's 6-all. Look, I won't say, oh, it's dead even. I think Brisbane looked the stronger. I think Brisbane was doing better in the middle of the field, but they open power up, a fifth tackle run, inside ball, you score under the sticks. Very next set, you can't let the opponent roll 80 metres up the field. Like, yes, it's fortuitous, the kick in behind. I actually thought Gutho did the right thing, the way it was kicking, to let that ball give it a chance to go dead, but it sat up, and you just tip your hat to an incredible play by Katoni Staggs to keep it alive. And suddenly it's 12 points in 2 minutes. And then 5 minutes later, another big Brisbane set, another perfect kick, chip in behind, perfect bounce, 22-6. Not only that, but then the heavens opened up about a minute later, so it was that much harder to score. So I really feel like Brisbane won the game then and there. I didn't see a comeback on the cards, really. But as I say, second half was just marred by the hip drops, really, the three incidents. And the first one was against the Eels. It was Hopgood. And so then they were down 24-6 because there was a penalty and they were down to 12. So there were no chance. But they actually held Brisbane out after that penalty and then scored a try. And then Mann was sin-binned and the Eels scored a minute after that. Suddenly it's 26-16. You've got the momentum. You've got an extra player on the field. Yeah, they had a chance to come back in this one. And I think we can talk about the incident with Payne Haas, but ultimately Parramatta forced some silly offloads. I'm thinking Sean Lane, Bryce Cartwright at times, at crucial times that hurt them. I've spoken about this game all from a Parramatta perspective. From Brisbane's perspective, give them a lot of credit. They've really bounced back from a disappointing defeat to the Raiders with two strong displays. I said this game might come down to the kicking duel. Reynolds wins it over Moses. Paddy Carrigan is just an animal. And Haas, the good is he had over 200 metres and he's a beast. The bad is a lot of people will argue it should have been 13 on 11 for his tackle on RCG, which not only injured RCG, I think saved a try. I actually think RCG crashes over there. So how did you see that one?
Yeah, I thought that was a sin bin for Haas. And to touch on all three briefly, the interesting thing with Jermaine Hopgood's one was he's now being charged with grade one, so only a fine, no suspension. But is it a hip drop if no injury occurs? I'd love for our viewers to answer this or yourself. I don't have the answer for it because it's not a head high if you miss the head, right? If I come to tackle you right now and I throw a high tackle, but it goes straight over your head, the referee doesn't generally turn around and go, that's a high tackle, you're in the bin, because there was no contact. So even though Jermaine Hopgood is in the motion, is it a hip drop if there's no hip drop? I don't know. It's a difficult one to think of. But yeah, Ezra Mams was a grade two, as was Payne Haas's. So if we're going consistent, both should have been sin binable offence, given they were the same grading. I do wonder if Ezra Mann being already off the field played into the referee's head a little bit, thinking, this is a huge call right now. Maybe I shouldn't call it here. Ultimately, I do believe if the Broncos were down to 11 men there, that the Eels would have come over the top in that Darwin heat. They were starting to play a lot better at that stage for the Eels. But after he didn't get sin bin, the Eels kind of almost dropped their heads a little bit. Some of the offloads that you touched on were very questionable and they failed to build any pressure. It was rush footy, score now, score now. It wasn't, let's stick to a game plan. And if we stick to that, we will get points eventually, which was disappointing for Eels fans. And it's the reason why you could never say this was a robbery, even if you thought Haas should have been sin bin. They had opportunities. They just didn't take them at all. And I think that's kind of the staple of the Eels season so far, Winnie. They are close. And they're good, but they're not good enough. And I look at them at the moment, and I think it's A or B. Either A, they are going to be a very good side, or B, they were a very good side, because they're not quite at the level they should be yet. And maybe they don't have to be this early in the season, but for the Eels fans, you really hope it's option A, that they're going to be a good side, and not option B, that they were a good side. But maybe they're a player or two short, Winnie. I don't know. But yeah, ultimately for the Broncos, they've got to walk away, please, right? They remain in first place. Now, for these next two games, I was at Outback Spectaculars, so I'll leave them to you from a preview perspective, and I've just gone in with a few stats, home visiting family guys, so had to make the most of it. But in this one, the Sharkies did win 33-20. I remember in the preview pod, I said something to the effect of, I think Sharks 13+, and I don't mind either of their wingers to score. Now, one of their wingers did score, Winnie, and I've heard the other blown a pretty easy try, if you will. So yeah, how did you see this one?
Yeah, so I can touch on both of those points as well. I'm slightly annoyed. You know, I don't want credit or, you know, anything if I say, oh, I nearly tipped something. But I feel like, you know, you said to me, oh, only two best bets this week. Maybe I was a little bit gun shy, but I had the correct lean in every game that I didn't give out. And this one, I leaned to the Dogs. But hey, in saying that, should they have covered 14.5? I don't know. We'll get to how that ended. You know, Cronulla was comprehensive, first of all. Never looked like losing. You have Kennedy comes out, scores a hat-trick in the first 22 minutes. You have Nico Hines, class again, definitely wants a sky blue jersey. Every member of the starting pack for Cronulla has 100-plus metres. But Canterbury had fight in them in this one. Scored the last try in the first half, which means they would have covered the first half line. I really did look at that 6.5. Didn't play it. And then second half, the Dogs scored last as well to pull the game within 10. Does that mean they should have covered? The line was 14.5, and Mulatalo does score what should have been the last try. But honestly, I am going to give him a spray for that because he's trying to look too cool. He gets the ball, big smile on the face, no defender near him. And it's more cool to kind of dive and slide through for a try rather than safely, two hands for beginners, put it down on the line. And his hand goes into touch. And I saw it live. I said, dead set, he's gone into touch there. Just wait till we get a replay. Sure enough, he did. Reminds me, Targo did exactly the same thing last year for the Panthers, and it cost us a best bet. Stop trying to be cool, guys. Just put it down. It's cool enough scoring a try in the NRL. The Sharks did add a penalty and then a field goal, which I know swayed some people's bets out there. You know, there's always people who've got the margin. It's either 1 to 12 or 13 plus. So, you know, that actually made you correct with that margin thanks to the late field goal. But as I say, if you had the Sharkies with the line, you definitely wish that Mulitalo could put the ball down cleanly.
Matt O'Keefe says, Butcher, try of the week, Mulitalo or Jennings? Well, for Jennings, which one, Matt? Because there was a couple. It's a tough question.
We're going to get to that too.
Unfortunately, we have to. I don't want to, but we will get to that. From the stats here, Winnie, there was 41 sets that each had, and the Sharks completed one more set than that. Though in that one set extra, they ran an extra 300 plus meters over this game, which equals 9.6, almost 10 meters extra per set. So, you know, it would kind of indicate they had a little bit of a lock there on the Doggies middle, who are still missing some players. From an attacking point of view, the 7 line breaks to 4 and the 35 to 20 tackle breaks kind of sums it up, you know, when you have someone in your side like Nico Hines. So I guess the final takeaway from this one is, Nico Hines in your current Blues lineup? And if so, where?
Great question. I'm still split. I would like give it up until the time, because I think there's a great case to be actually still to be made for Luai. And you could also play Hines, especially with Whiten retiring from rep footy. You could have Hines at 14. I'll throw it back at you. Who's in your squad currently?
I've got him at 6 currently. But with Jack Whiten retiring, I previously had Jack in the 14. I'll completely get it if the Blues do go, let's keep Luai and let's have Hines in the 14, because he's a guy that can play fullback, maybe a bit of hooker, halves, center, you name it. It's maybe even back row, like a Wade Graham. He's very, very versatile in that regard. Final takeaway, Mulitalo, if it's worked for over 100 years, it still works, buddy. Just put it down over the line. Cowboys versus Knights up in Townsville. The Cowboys walk away with an 18-16 win. Now, my tips this round have been horrible, Winnie. I got this one wrong. I got the Sharks one right. I got the Eels wrong. I got the Rabbitohs game wrong. And I got this one wrong. Only just looks like it was a close one. Did it play out that way in your eyes?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when I say the lean I had won on every game, I did lean Cowboys in this. The line was -2, so you would say it would have pushed. But had I bet the Cowboys as a best bet, -1.5 was available on Wednesday, just like +2.5 was available. So this is one of those games where if you're a sharp punter, you probably won on either of these teams, because if you got the best of the number, you found a winner there. Look, it was a great game, and I think the reason North Queensland won it is they just had to have it, and they did just enough to clinch it in the end. I hate to say this because I'm a fan of his play, but it's like goal kicking again. This is 3 games in the last month that the Knights haven't won, and it's a goal kick the difference. And that's agonizing for me, giving out these future bets on the Knights, you know, ladder handicap, most improved, best of bad bunch. And they've only won 3 games this season, if you can believe that, from how good they've been. And I said a month ago when they missed that kick for the win in Mudgee against Manly, that I would feel more comfortable if Hastings was a kicker. But I'm watching closely. I don't think he's 100%. I think he's actually playing slightly hurt. My reason for that is he doesn't kick for touch, doesn't kick goals, and he's running the ball way less than he was, you know, even 1 year ago. So maybe he's just kind of playing because he's had to. And positive injury news, Ponga came back off the bench, which I actually thought was a fair move there. And he really looked like himself. It was a threat nearly every touch. Gave Newcastle a great chance to win this. Did you know Newcastle has led in 8 of 8 games in the second half? They've held a second half lead in 8 of 8 for 3 wins, which hurts me again. But look, whoever lost this game was going to be shattered, because it was very tight. It was intense. They both wanted it a lot. And the Cowboys would have been shattered if not for a superstar moment by Valentine Holmes, standing up his Maroons teammate Gagai, setting up the winning try. Drinkwater was great in this one. He missed an opportunity in the first half, but He was a big part of the win. Cotter, huge, making up for the hole left by Taumalolo. And, yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me. These two teams have the same number of wins after what I've watched in the last 2 months of footy.
Yeah, I mean, that is very crazy when you put it that way, because in my mind, the Knights have been so much better. It's not funny. The Cowboys did only have a 36% win record without Jason Taumalolo coming into this one, so they do improve that. But for the Knights, again, it's the same story where they are just so close. And you have to wonder, Winnie, how long can they travel down this road where they draw or they get close and they're just losing before they drop their heads? It can only happen so many times, and you can keep using it as motivation. Oh, we were so close against the Panthers. We were so close. Eventually, you're going to drop your head and think, well, we're pretty sick of getting close, but not walking away with anything. Yeah.
And I can already hear the excuses. Like, in 2 months' time, in 3 months' time, it'll be, oh, well, if we'd won some of those close games earlier in the year, we'd be top eight right now. You know, it'll like, because O'Brien, the master excuse maker, you're right. Like, they need some positive results or else, you know, it's a long season to maintain this. It'll be hard to stomach a lot more results like that.
Yeah, but I mean, also, not to use it as an excuse, but if they do get to round 27 and miss the eight by 2 points, it's hard not to look back as a Knights fan and think what could have been if we just had a bit of a better goal kicker, because it was three tries each in this one. I wonder if Kalen Ponga might get back into goal kicking, something he's not done too recently, but he's certainly available to. I think he'll be back starting next week, so that is a positive for the Knights if there is one from this game. The Cowboys were pretty good. They completed 81%. Maybe not as many points as they would have liked for such a high completion rate, but that could go back to maybe just missing a tiny bit of spark or chemistry out wide at the moment. But they did miss 47 tackles to the Knights, who only missed 21. And they also did concede 7 penalties to the Knights. So maybe an opportunity there for the Cowboys to improve on those. But the question for the Cowboys here, Winnie, is when or do they get back to their best? Because although they've won a few games this year, 2 points to the Knights, 1 point win over the Raiders, and unfortunately against my Titans, none of those 3 wins have been too impressive for me. So do you have an answer for that question? Do you think the Cowboys are going to get back to their best, or not too sure yet?
It's funny, like you're waiting for them to get back to their best, and you're going to keep making the excuse of injuries, but like just last week, it's announced Taumalolo needs surgery. So how can they get to their best until, you know, their captain is back? So it is going to be a bit of a patch up job and just, you know, just do what they can. But 2 points in a game like that's just absolute gold for them at this point in the season. And they admitted it afterwards in all the interviews that they needed that so badly. They could have tailspin if they didn't win that game, and boy, it was close. But they've kept their season alive.
Absolutely. Well, let's call the show right there. I don't think there's any need to talk about the next game. So we'll see you. All right, let's get into it.
I almost wanted to do Tigers next just to leave people, leave the big finale. But do you want to just get it out of the way? I can't promise it'll be quick.
Let's jump into the Clarkey Winnie Cup. Dolphins win 28-26. My MVP was Jared Wallace. And if there is one positive from anything, I hope people trusted me and backed him for a try, because he scored and he set up another. All right, with that out of the way, over to you, Winnie. You can have your say on what was probably a great game for yourself.
Because this game was back and forth, I want to go back and forth with you. So I am going to throw to you, because I think the way to describe this game is you talk about it from a Titans perspective, the way that you watched it the whole way. I'll talk about it from a Dolphins perspective. So I'll give you the first half, because the Titans did get a lead up to 26-0. In fact, 30-0 before that try was called back. Let's start positive. Talk about what they did right and how did they do that, Clarkey?
We started hard and fast, and I think that's a great way to beat the Dolphins if you do want to, because typically the Dolphins, we sort of said this at the ground to each other, but the Dolphins aren't a side that until this point had been able to really chase big points. They're a sort of side that wants to get in it with you, have a close contest, and eventually through completing their sets and through playing consistent footy, they'll get it over the top of you eventually. So I must admit, I was feeling really confident when we opened up a huge lead, because I thought we've started with a game plan here that the Dolphins aren't going to react well to. So the roller coaster was going up, 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 up. And it just, in that second half, it just, I've never seen it. Well, there hasn't been a crash that big, Winnie. It's the biggest comeback ever in NRL history for your Dolphins, which is heartbreaking.
It was amazing. Like 20,000 people there, most of them Dolphins fan, Dolphins home crowd. So all those people came out. Boy, they got their money's worth. You know, I was there in the crowd with you. I did enjoy it, and I didn't feel good. I mean, we were sitting in the sun. It was bloody hot for an April game. And I'm just watching your boys run try after try in, and I was, you know, joking about going early. And I give you credit. While you did say you were confident, of course you're going to be confident with how good your team looked. You were never cocky. And, you know, I was the one saying, oh, what's the biggest wins the Titans have ever had in their history? Maybe I was almost trying to reverse jinx you there, but you were like, oh, I'm not looking that up at the moment, mate. I'll just be happy with a win. I've seen us blow way too many of these. You were not, you know, highly confident or taking it for granted, that's for sure. And it was actually a bit sad watching you almost die a little bit inside as Dolphins got closer and closer. I want to give the followers a bit of an insight too. And a bit of people realize Clarkie's dedication. He comes to Suncorp. As I say, we're sitting in the sun, you know, it's kind of crammed into these seats. There's people in front, but he pulls out this, you know, leather briefcase with his laptop or his iPad tablet. And he's, you know, pulling the stats up in Photoshop, creating the graphics, posting them, you know, seconds after the completion of halves. Even when he's at the game, he never takes a moment off, guys. And even when he's emotionally distressed. So you talked about how the Titans built that big lead. For me, the Dolphins just looked flat, like they couldn't go with the Titans. I don't know if the weather was too hot for them. The comeback began at the end of the first half from an innocuous moment, just a try off a bomb, you know, against the run of play. But sometimes you need that moment, you need that bounce, and it can change things. Mind you, I really thought the Dolphins needed to get a second try before halftime. And the Titans did pretty well to keep that lead at 20. You know, there's a sideline call that doesn't go the Dolphins' way. There's a sin bin call that doesn't go the Dolphins' way. I thought it was going to be too many points to chase because the Dolphins, they're not an explosive team like that, as you said. But in the second half, what I really loved about the Dolphins' game plan, they didn't come out thinking we're going to try and get it all back quickly. They really came out and tried to earn it and just worked the middle of the field and got back on top and started winning the arm wrestle. And what that eventually led to, kind of more than 10 minutes into the second half, they finally broke through and got that first try of the second half. That was from ball playing of Jared Wallace. Then he, as you called, he gets a try himself. Suddenly it's 26-18, at which point there's a little two-minute clip you guys might have seen on social media of some live reactions that we got for the remaining 15, 20 of the game, which included not one, not two, but three Jennings chances to score. Thank goodness he took the third one. But that first one's one of the most bizarre plays I've ever witnessed. If people can explain what happened, I'd love to hear in the comments because I don't know if he suffered full-body paralysis, if somebody in the crowd had a taser, or if we're in a simulation and some alien's controller disconnected or the battery died. I don't know. He said he didn't want to do a double movement. So someone should explain to him that when no one's within cooee of you, you are allowed to move. I watched the replay again today and Tanner Boyd actually stops chasing to a complete standstill 10 meters away. That's how sure he was of the try. Then realizes that Jennings is just still like a dead fish and actually then runs again and obviously claims him. But as we said, Jennings ended up getting the decisive try, so they can all joke about it. Now it is the equal biggest comeback in history of the NRL. And yeah, I genuinely do feel bad for you, but now I do need to get your eyewitness account of the second half collapse from a Titans perspective.
Well, yeah, I think I was playing it up for that 2 minute clip, but deep inside I was dying. I mean, there was a stage there where we were up 30-0. That try gets disallowed. Dolphins go the full field. And I said Broncos because I got PTSD from the week before when we did it. That sums it up there. The Dolphins go the full length of the field and try. And at that point, I thought this is giving me flashbacks to a lot of games where we've blown the second half. Thank God Jennings did blow two tries. If he did and they converted both, that score would be 40-26, which is unbelievable. Look, it was overall the experience was great because I finally got to meet you after so many years of sort of working together. But at what cost? I mean, it's so hard to be in a game, be doing content without letting your full emotions show. But I was a real mixture of just disappointment, confusion, and heartbreak because you can give any other team in this league, Winnie, a 26-point head start, and they ain't losing. Even the Tigers probably ain't losing, but the Titans somehow do it. And we don't, it's not a coincidence. We've done it multiple times. We did it at Chiro Stadium against the Raiders last year. You can argue we did it against the Broncos last round. You can say we did it against the Broncos twice the year before. So many of these moments where, you know, I could be so negative towards the Titans and my club. I won't. I don't think that's going to help anyone right now. But honestly, besides my friends and family, to me, winning this club is everything. All week supporting them, all week just waiting for the game to see how we go, get that win, makes my week. And when they put in a performance like that, that, you know, I've traveled two states to get to and watch, and I've, you know, got some good tickets. Disappointment doesn't really sum it up. It really sucked. The positive of this is we did have a bet for the Clarkie or Winnie Clarkie inaugural cup, as it will forever be known as the Winnie Clarkie Cup. If the Titans had a won, it had to be the Clarkie Winnie Cup. But Winnie will always go first on the Winnie Clarkie Cup. The Jacob Wynn lineage, future co-host of the Tripod. He'll take my seat one day. I've got Jacob's young son, a Dolphins jersey, on the way. But, mate, if you've got enough of me suffering here, I can't wait to get into the next game.
No, that's right. I appreciate that, mate. So one of us is going to get a junior jersey for the other one's child. And I'm actually glad I didn't have to buy a Titans jersey for your daughter, because I wouldn't have felt good handing that over, because it could be a choking hazard. So... I'm sorry, because I'm not finished either, because you don't want to criticize the Titans, and I respect that, but I am here for it. Holbrook, I've kind of had my doubts about him. Like, he's been there how many years now? Did he take over 2020? Like, they had that first year of grace where no one expected anything, then they won like the final four or five games of the year, positive signs, they made the finals with a young team, but they came back down to earth last year, they haven't got better this year. You know, people say, what did Bennett say at halftime? You know, amazing coaching by Wayne Bennett, right? If you're going to give credit to a coach for a comeback, then you have to give blame to coaches for, you know, their part in their team losing by 26. And in the press conference, he didn't take much accountability. He talked about, oh, we're preparing really well. Yeah. It's just, you know what his quote was? It's just what's happening in the games. We're ready to play. Yeah. It's just what's happening in the games. You coached a team for 3 years. You do have some responsibility for what happens in the games. You didn't just take over this week, I'm sorry to say. And as you mentioned, like, we kind of saw this a week ago when you had a Freudian slip and said Brisbane, because Brisbane was down 14-6 and then scored about the next 30 in the game. So it's kind of similar, just like you didn't have as big of a lead. But other than that, in a big spot, the team capitulated. And... you know, even last year, there were comments like, oh, we're waiting for Kieran Foran to get here. And I was really worried when I heard them saying that. Like, Foran's not going to come here and change this club. He played the whole game yesterday. You know, you'd like to think that a controlling half helps you get manager lead. But, you know, I still seem to recall the Dolphins winning that game with that historic comeback. We said it as well at halftime. The Titans can't put the cue in the rack. They need to come out and keep scoring. I feel like you need to look to your star players when the game is going against you. Who's going to turn that momentum? I know that Fifita had a good game. He had a costly late error. I know Tino, Mo, they ran hard. AJ had an amazing little kick return in that break. You know, maybe that's a match-winning play just about. But maybe the walls caving in, that pressure, and the fact that it's happened a lot of times now where the Titans have blown leads. Like, does that pressure cooker force you to make mistakes and make it harder to be calm? Because AJ didn't back himself. You didn't have to score. You actually had the lead at that point, but he wanted to find Kaan Perera. Mm. I understand how quick he is. He forced a pass there, which threw possession straight back to the Dolphins. You know, and that was one of only a handful of opportunities the Titans had to actually get out of their half, because the whole second half was played one end of the field. They couldn't do it. And when you're under that amount of pressure, you are, you know, most teams are going to crack. So, I know about how good it felt for me cheering the Dolphins on, but there's two sides of it. I know how much that hurt you as well. There's a comment there about BKR Sport. We'll give a shout out to Blaze because we saw him there and he was genuinely devastated because you said he might be the one bloke out there that's a bigger Titans fan than even yourself.
Yeah, he is. He travels to every game. He's on the drums at all the home ones. He was, well, I can say it because it was on the vlog. Yeah, he was in tears after that. copped a bit of a disrespectful comment, I would say, from a player post game as well, from us as well, which was would be hard to take. Yeah, not much going right for the Titans right now. My advice, in case COVID-20 ever comes around, stock up on Titans jerseys, because we saw the toilet paper goes in the Woolworths and Coles. So maybe it'll come in handy in 50 years if we ever get a COVID-20. But thank you to every Lord and God that's ever existed that is over. Manly Sea Eagles defeat the West Tigers 22-16. My MVP was Daly Cherry Evans. He's had a bit of an underrated year here so far. I don't think he's had a bad game yet, and he had a hand in all three tries. For the Tigers, it was close, but not close enough. How did you see this one?
Yes, I saw the Tigers winning the second half yet again. We should just be betting it every week. I've been saying it more as a trend rather than a prediction. There's something to it that they do fight back. In fact, in this one, they hit the front after being down 8 points. So they really had a chance to break their duck coming out after the bye. You know, another game, just to go back to, you know, me talking about my leans, like I did say if I leaned in the Titans-Dolphins game, I actually thought the 2.5 was a good start for the Titans. I believe you can go back and check the tape, and I predicted a Dolphins win by 1 or 2, just not in that fashion. I was not going to back the Dolphins for the Titans for a best bet plus 2.5 when I was going to be at the ground with you. I felt like the Winnie Clarkey Cup, we had to be, you know, all out for our team, but you leave one on the table there. I know Izako misses that late conversion, and the Dolphins nearly won by 4, or as you said, those Jennings misses. I'm not necessarily saying who should have covered these games. I'm just kind of like, man, so many of these games that I didn't have a bet, what I wanted to pick ended up winning, which is kind of annoying. And same in this one, what did I say? Like the Tigers line, but I just wasn't brave enough. And I said 1-12, and you get Manly wins by 6 points because the Tigers did kind of bottle it at the end, but it may not feel like a win for Manly because just as big of a headline is Turbo injuring his groin in this one. And I remarked to the guys I was watching it with, he doesn't look like he fully even lengthens his stride or gets into top gear in these games. Like he's playing cautiously, but despite that, he still hurt himself, which is tough. Although, you know, Manly gets the win, but obviously they'll be sweating on his fitness, as will New South Wales fans. And you might have to recalculate who you would pick for your team, Clarkey. But I'll just leave you with this cruel stat. Abbie Coruscant has lost the same number of games with the Tigers this year as he had in the previous 3 seasons combined with Penrith.
And we know he had great faith when he came to the Tigers with his grand final speech where he declared he was going to win a premiership with them in a very serious tone. So, no, the positive news is, though, when he was cleared of serious injury to the groin today and they might play him this Saturday against the Titans, I think they'll rest him. I don't see why you'd risk him against us. But Greg Alexander did say today, I've got my phone here, it's a quote, he said, "It doesn't just happen. Until he finds a bit of form and confidence, there is plenty to think about." So Greg Alexander is an advisor for the Blues team, and he's saying at this stage, Turbo is not locked in, and there is plenty of options in that centre position, so it will be an interesting one. Yeah, said at the start, I'll say it again, a close game where the Tigers were there, and they had chances to win, but they just didn't. And I will say, in that second half, about a solid 10 minutes winning. I genuinely thought they were going to win here. This will be their first win of the year. They're looking good. And then I thought to myself, it's the Tigers. They're going to find a way to lose. And they did. That Jason Saab try in the 71st minute, from that point onwards, every single decision the Tigers made was bad, particularly in attack. Silly unforced passes, horrible set structures, no creativity. And, you know, you just look at their current spine, and I think, Winnie, that this has been a long issue where if you're closer to win games and you're not winning, the spine has to take the responsibility for that. It's their job to guide you to points, and when you get a lead, hold on to that lead. Jareem Buller, not too bad on debut for fullback, and he actually had better stats than Tom Dvojevic, though Tom did look like he was playing not himself out there, but still a great, great debut there. Dane Laurie, he just played New South Wales Cup at 5'8". Do they go to a structure, Winnie, where they think, well, we're not scoring enough points here, so let's go Dane Laurie 5'8", Brandon Wakeham at 7, Coruscant 9, and keep Buller at fullback? Do you think there's more points in that spine than what they've currently got?
Yeah, I think that's worth a try. I didn't know that Laurie had played lower grades in the halves. He doesn't necessarily have the natural frame for it, but give that a try, because wasn't there kind of a slim, quick kid that played 5/8 for the Tigers, you know, 20 years ago, and they seem to do pretty well. I think he may be on the coaching staff now, so maybe that is the answer. I know, obviously, if you do that lineup you just suggested, there's no room for Luke Brooks, and as we've said before, that may not be a bad thing. It's not always his fault when they lose. We've just said before, you just got to change it up at this point. What have you got to lose?
And I don't even mind Luke Brooks at 14 coming on for a little bit of hooker as a ball playing lock, something a little bit different. For Manly, I don't really have too many notes other than this is another win where they were good but not great. And I think you can almost say that about all of their performances this year besides that Storm game. So they are a tough side to get a read on. A weird situation coming from this game, Winnie. I'm just going to drag up my post today for around the league. So the referee audio revealed that scuffle they had was Brandon Wakeham said that Samuel Fayenu spat in his face. Pretty big allegation there. Didn't go any further. Then as they went off the field, Josh Alioi said to him, if you want to chat the S word, come around the corner and let's chat. So then everyone separated them. And then Brandon Wakeham tried to get into the Seagull shed. And the officials were like, nah, man, you're with the Tigers. Get out of here. So keep an eye on when these two next teams play, because there could be a bit of bad blood there. And the other interesting thing that you will not believe, Winnie, Sione Fayenu, who is the brother of the guy involved in those, plays for the Tigers. So, I mean, this is like Marvel Civil War in the NRL. Unbelievable scenes there.
And then Manasi Fayenu, he's got his own issues as well, which relate to violence too. But I guess they say if you don't win the game, win the fight. Maybe that's what Wakeham was attempting to do. It doesn't get any easier for the Tigers, does it? I can't remember off the top of my head who they got next week, but I think we said a few weeks ago we didn't see a decent chance at 2 points until round 10, which is the Dragons, which is a magic round.
Yeah, I'm just dragging up their draw now. Yeah, they got the Panthers next week in Bathurst. That'll be tough. Dragons at magic round. Then they go into Bunnies and Cowboys before they get another bye.
So if you don't win that magic round one, you're looking at historical territory for worst ever starts.
You're looking at round 15 against the Titans as your next best bet. That's it's going to be a tough season for Tigers fans. But that's pretty much all I've got for our preview of Anzac round and recap of round 8. If you're happy with that, Winnie, we will call it there. Now it's Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. where we'll be here to preview everything round 9. Am I correct in that?
That's right. Yep. Back to normal. Awesome. Programming should resume after the public holiday, and I hope everyone has a great day. And I also pass, obviously, my respects to everyone that's been involved in the Defence Forces. That's the day that that's the reason for the day, and we've got to always remember that. And that includes yourself, mate.
Absolutely. Lest we forget, guys. And just one more thing from me. Fins down. Like, so down. To the ground. Through the earth. To whatever the center core is called. Wednesday, 6:30 p.m., guys. We'll see you there. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate yous a lot.
Lego.